Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin? How did they end? Let's find out on this episode of Fan of History. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Bernie. I am so excited for this.
Yes. This is Dan's episode. I'm going to shut my mouth for a little while.
Well, we will talk about another great Ramana teacher from India. Next to the Buddha, Mahavira, the 24th Tirthankara. Before I get into Jainism and the great hero, which is what Mahavira means, I wanted to mention Confucius. How do you pronounce that in English?
I say Confucius.
Confucius, yeah. Yes.
That's how I say it, yeah.
The very reason for the word confused.
Yeah, right.
He is born on September 28th, 551, maybe.
Mm.
But we'll talk about him in the 540s in order to do like one or more episodes on all the great philosophies and religions of the 550s.
Yeah.
This one is all about Jainism. The Buddhists were eventually expelled from India. That's why Buddhism isn't that big in India, but they had to go elsewhere. But the Jainists, they were never expelled.
Oh.
So first, they're still there. There is somewhat less than 5 million Indians still practicing this religion.
Yeah. I hear that they're very successful, too. They're like lawyers and doctors and stuff like that.
Oh, yes. It's an interesting religion. I will try not to talk too much about that, but talk about the historical person, Mahavira.
Okay.
But we also need to cover India. So remember the organization of Northeast India?
Yeah, a little bit. You could remind me.
The 16 kingdoms?
Yes, right. There were 16 different kingdoms.
Yes, the traditional number is 16. So we have along the Ganges River, we have 4 centrally placed states. And they at first compete among themselves for dominance. To the northwest was Kosala, which had several cities, for example, Shravasti and Saketa. South of the river was Magadha, ruled very shortly by the guy we mentioned as Buddha's disciple. Remember him?
Yeah, kind of.
Magadha, which will shortly be ruled by King Bimbisara. And he will be very important to Jainism as well. Super important, actually. Even more important than it was in Buddhism.
Hmm.
Maybe even all important.
Wait, do you have to tell me there's a Buddha's disciple that's ruling, and then he's important in Buddhism and Jainism?
Yes, and he's actually not ruling yet. So I will mention when he takes the power in Magadha, because this episode is all about Mahavira.
Okay.
To the southwest, we have Kasi, and to the northeast is Vri. So these are the 4 central powers. And Magadha will conquer this entire area, but it will take a long time.
Okay.
We also have the outlying states outside these 4 central states. We have Aga, Vatsa.
You're the best.
Where there are excavations, actually, right now.
Oh, man, that'd be great.
And India is notoriously hard to excavate.
It is?
Yes, because it's so populated.
Oh, yeah.
We also have Sarasena, Avanti. This will just be 16 names, but they will come back later in our story.
Okay.
And then we have Sedi, Matsaya, and Pankata on the upper Ganges River.
Okay.
And away to the northwest, we have Gandhara. And now we're getting to the region where the Shramana tradition is not that strong, and it's more Vedic religion turning into Hinduism.
Okay.
And then we have the short-lived state of Mala. But we will get back to this world when Bimbisara takes power, and we'll see the rise of Magadha here.
Okay. They're very similar in, like, culture, all these different areas, right? I mean, they're similar, like, they're, like, the same kind of people. They have sort of the same beliefs. They have sort of the same structures, right? I mean, they're different countries, so to speak, but they're similar. They're not like Greece and India. It's totally different.
That's true. And there will be four religions coming out of India. Hinduism, Sikhism, mm-hmm. Buddhism, and Jainism. And they all share some common concepts, such as rebirth and karma.
Right.
But a lot of Indian historians see the parallel here with the rise of Magadha and the rise of Persia in the West.
Mm.
And eventually these two cultures come into contact.
Mm-hmm.
And that will happen during the lifetime of Cyrus.
Right.
But that is northwest India he will reach first. That is the Vedic region. This is mainly, we are sticking to the northeast and the Shramana territories.
Right.
Do you remember the Shramanas?
Remind me.
They are the thinkers of northeast India.
Okay.
And they don't adhere to the Vedic religion that much. And they think a lot about the existence of the soul, if you are supposed to eat meat or not. And they are philosophers. Okay. They fit really well into the 6th century BC.
For sure.
And there were, as I mentioned in the Buddha episodes, over 60 different schools of thought. Only two of them survived, Buddhism and Jainism.
Mm-hmm. So interesting.
And they are very related. You will notice that Siddhartha Gautama would make a great Jainist.
Yeah.
And they consider him a charming fellow of sorts, but he was not one of the Tirthankaras. And the Tirthankaras are all that matter. So our guy today...
They're all that matter in Jainism.
Oh, yes.
Right, okay. Just being sure.
They are more important than the gods. Because as Buddhism, Jainism acknowledges that they are gods. But the Tirthankaras are even better than gods.
Amazing.
And this guy, Mahavira, who we're going to talk about today, was the 24th Tirthankara.
Hmm.
And then I probably have to explain what this means.
I think so.
A Tirthankara is a Ford maker. He is one who builds the path for others to follow. Because the big problem is, of course, rebirth. You're born again all the time. And you have to end that, just like Buddha wanted.
Mm-hmm.
End the endless cycle of rebirths. And the ones who discover how to do that are the Tirthankaras.
Mm-hmm. It's Buddha-like.
Yeah. So Jainism believes that the universe was never created. It always existed. And it has no creator.
Okay.
Time is split into eras. Eras are very, very, very long, ridiculously long, super long, much longer than the age of the universe, because the universe has no age in Jainism. And I'll get back to exactly how long the current era is, because it's really, really long.
Who creates the eras, though? I'm sorry, but like, if you have no God, who's in charge of these eras?
No one is. They are there. They are everything.
Yeah.
And there's been an infinite numbers of these eras before.
All right.
And an infinite number of Tirthankaras.
Okay.
But the eras are defined by the lives of 24 Tirthankaras. 24 great guys.
I understand now.
Nobody does. So.
I mean, I get it, though. Like, the eras aren't like, we're not coming to the end of an era because it's already been preset. It takes a one of those guys to be born. And become one of them.
Well, we're actually now at the very end of the current era, even though it has lasted a billion, billion, million inches of the universe.
Oof.
So it's now ending pretty much right now.
Damn. Better get my bags.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow-up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
It's back.
So Mahavira is the 24th Tirthankara of the current era, which is ending. The historical evidence for this guy. Remember that we said that the historical evidence for Jesus is bad?
Yeah.
The historical evidence for Buddha was even worse.
Hmm.
But this guy is considered a historical person, as is the 23rd Tirthankara, Parshvanatha. But the evidence is basically... well, somebody created this, and it was probably him, because that's what the Jainist says.
All right.
But the evidence is horrible, and all, remember, India does not have writing.
Right.
So his disciple took down his teachings, but they were lost, so we don't have much of them.
Mm-hmm.
So before they were written down, they lost most of the teachings.
As always happens to us.
So Mahavira was perhaps born in 599. It's about as uncertain as the Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
And he died in 527 BC, which makes him contemporary with the Buddha, but somewhat older.
Okay.
And thus, King Bimbisara of Magadha could meet both of them. He could hang out with Mahavira first and then meet the Buddha.
Yeah.
Do you remember how Bimbisara died?
No, I don't remember.
In the Buddha story.
No, remind me.
Buddha's evil cousin, Devadatta, tried to take over the Sangha, the community, which is also the term for the Jainists. They're also the Sangha.
Okay.
And he made Bimbisara's son imprison him and then kill him.
Oh.
But in Jainism, exactly the same thing happens. I'll get back to that. But Bimbisara is not killed by his son, which is important.
Okay.
I have to mention the religion a bit first for you to understand Mahavira.
Okay.
And there was a great schism in the religions. There are actually two schools today. But this schism happens 1,000 years later than this.
Yeah.
But it's super funny, so I have to talk about it.
It is. Right. There was this about the monks or something, right?
Please forgive me, Jainists. So,
oh, I remember. Yes, tell it.
The Sangha is composed of normies and monks and nuns. And nuns are more common than monks in one of the schools. One of these two split schools of Jainism.
Mm-hmm.
But one rule is that if you're a monk or a nun, you must have no attachments to material things. So the schism is about... can you even wear clothes? Because if you wear clothes, you get attached to them.
Yeah, I know. I love my clothes.
So one school has only naked monks. But they can't have naked girls running around. So girls just can't be nuns. They have to live a good life and then be reborn as men so they can become monks. But the other school allows white clothes nuns, lots of them. But the naked school does only allow men.
I have two things to say about that. One is, if you're going to be have no attachments, and it shouldn't matter if you're a man or a woman. But my other thing I like to say is that I went to a Catholic school, and I'm glad that those nuns weren't naked. So, so I guess I'll go with that. I mean, why does it? It seems like, why do they say, well, obviously women can't be naked. Why is that obvious? But
because of men, probably.
Yes, pretty much. But if you have no attachments, you should be fine in practical matters.
If you try to remember one thing about Jainism today, I want you to remember Ahimsa, the principle of non-violence. This is the most important rule in Jainism, which means that this is the world's most peaceful religion. They will not commit violence, even to protect themselves or their children.
Amazing.
That means that they're always vegetarians. So they're quite like the Buddhists, but they are more hardcore, I would say.
Oof.
Especially the monks and the nuns. There are no other positions in the religion, so you can't be a priest or a guru or something. Mahavira probably invented this. But Jainis says that the 24 Tirthankaras invented this, each one of them. But I'll talk a bit more about them soon.
Okay.
One other thing you need to know is that there is heaven and hell, and there are gods, and there's karma. So if you do good deeds, you get good karma. If you do bad deeds, you get bad karma. But in order to stop rebirth, you must have no karma.
No karma.
Yes. So you must do no good deeds and no bad deeds. And one interesting...
Just no deeds.
One interesting... absolutely no deeds is... You have to think a lot and do a lot of painful things to yourself.
And be hungry.
But if you get... Their view of karma is special because they consider karma almost a kind of dust or points that connect to you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a lot of bad karma, you are reborn in hell, where the bad karma burns away. If you have a lot of good karma, you're reborn in heaven, which is a super fantastic place. But then you spend your good karma, and then you're reborn back into the normal world. But you're still reborn. So the Tirthankaras are way better than people who are in heaven or gods. And there's actually one of the 24 Tirthankaras that will be born in the coming era is a god who has behaved especially correctly.
Mm.
So it's one of the Hindu gods who is supposed to, in his next life, become a Tirthankara.
Oh, good for him. Way to go.
So we have 24 Tirthankaras in the current era.
Okay.
So let me tell you about the first one.
Okay.
He is born two to the power of 224 years ago.
What? Say that again.
He is born 10... to the power of 224 years ago.
Oh my God, that's a long time.
This is 10 to the power of 214 times longer than the age of the universe. He also lives 10 to the power of 8 times longer than the age of the universe. And he's 1,500 meters tall.
Where does he live?
Well, actually, if you go back to 10 to the power of 224 years, you will discover there are cities in India. So he's born in a city of India.
Oh.
And he does a lot of wise things. And in order to become a Tirthankara, there's been an endless number of Tirthankaras in the previous eras, but this is the beginning of our current era.
Hmm.
And in order to become a Tirthankara, you have to do 5 things. And you, Bernie, you have done 2 of them already.
All right, I got my pen. Let me write them down.
So you're 40% of the way to become a Tirthankara. And there's been only 24 of these guys in 10 to the power of 224 years.
But this is like one of those games, you know, you go to McDonald's and you get to collect the things. And then if you, oh, I have all 3, like the Monopoly, but then you never get the main one.
And they are exceedingly harder.
Yeah.
So the first thing you did, Bernie, on your way to become a Tirthankara is that your mother got pregnant.
Okay, that was easy.
The second thing you did is that you were born. Good job.
All right.
The third thing you have to do now is to abandon all your commitments and property. Are you done with that?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, we'll work on that later.
Yeah, because I need to keep this microphone on.
And whereas this guy, Ridshab Hanatha, he spent 1,000 years after abandoning his property, and then he became omniscient.
Oh.
And he got a following of 3 million female monks and 84,000 male monks.
All clothed, I assume.
Yes, they were clothed at this time. Or maybe that's not okay. What the other school says. I won't go into that.
Yeah.
And once you're omniscient, it's pretty easy to reach level 5. You have to die and achieve moksha, where you are not reborn anymore.
Hmm. And that's like a special heaven, isn't it, from what I understand? Moksha?
I don't understand it. But this is what he did that long time ago. So and when you look at the 24 great guys, they tend to have enormous heights and weird skin colors. But Mahavira is only 6 feet tall. So he dropped from 1,500 meters to 6 feet tall. And I'll just check in with the crocodile, Pushpadanta, the ninth of the great guys. He's only 300 meters tall. He only lives for 14.1 quintillion years.
You're killing me. Go ahead, sorry.
And he goes through the 5 steps as well. Sounds easy, right? But only 24 guys did it.
I know. You're not kidding.
If the evidence for Mahavira's historicity is bad, they're even worse for Parshvanatha. But he is number 23. He became 100 years old, and he was only 13 and a half feet tall.
13 and a half feet tall?
Yes. And he lived in the 8th century BC.
Oh, he was tall.
Oh, the 9th century BC, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Oh, depending on who you ask.
Yeah.
But he also seems to live in the world of the 5th century BC, as they all do, because it's these places that now exist in India in the 6th century BC.
Okay.
They are present. And remember, we talked about India in the 9th century BC, and this doesn't sound like that place.
Mm-hmm.
But some historians claim that this guy is an historical person.
The 13-foot guy?
Yep. But I think we can restrict ourselves to trying to evaluate if Mahavira, the 24th guy, is a historical person.
Okay.
He is also claimed to have lived 27 times before he achieved this moksha, the end of reborn. That's normally you have to be reborn 8,400,000 times. So
this guy's pretty good.
And Buddha was reborn even more times than this guy was. He was reborn in hell.
Damn.
And got rid of all his bad karma. He spent one life as a lion and one life as the god Deva.
Hmm.
But then he was born for the final time as a prince. Oh, do we recognize this?
Tell me.
Well,
Siddhartha.
The Buddha led. And his father's name was Siddhartha.
Oh, geez.
Coincidence?
Maybe.
His mother was Trishala. These two people were fanatic Jainists already and devotees to the lore of Parshvanatha, the 23rd great guy. At the age of 30, Mahavira got bored with the luxury, maybe even had a charioteer that took him into the world where he could see suffering.
Ooh, sounds familiar.
So he became an ascetic at the age of 30.
Hmm.
He practiced intense meditation and severe austerities for 12 and a half years, after which he attained Kivalayana, omniscience. This is very similar to the Buddha.
So much so like the Buddha.
And contemporary to the Buddha.
Wow. It must have been a certain time in the world that this kind of magic was happening, maybe.
He preached for 30 years and then he attained moksha and wasn't reborn again. He seems to be about somewhat over 70 years old when he dies. The first evidence we have in writing or icons is from the 1st century BC.
Oh.
In the North Indian city of Mathura. So everything is uncertain about this.
Yeah. Do we have statues and stuff?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have a lot of them today, but
yeah.
None of them older than the first century BC.
Oh, none of them older than that. Okay.
And Ashoka doesn't care for this guy, so he didn't put a lot of great monuments up in the third century BC.
Yeah. Splitting hairs, if you ask me. I guess, you know, Buddha, this guy, pretty close.
And then we have the death of the 24th Tirthankara, which means that a new era is about to begin. But I haven't understood completely if we have to wait for the first Tirthankara of the new era, or if we actually are in the new era.
Hmm.
Maybe that's contested as well.
Oh, we don't know if he's born or not yet.
But we know who he is.
Who is he?
Well, back to Mahavira's life first, so we can introduce him. Because often the Tirthankaras have studied under the old Tirthankaras in a previous life.
Oh, of course.
So during this time when Mahavira preaches, he runs into King Bimbisara of Magadha.
He sounds familiar.
Yeah. It appears that King Bimbisara is very interested in Shramanism and talking to this very clever guy who is now omniscient and before the Buddha. So Bimbisara becomes a devotee of Jainism and studies. And Mahavira discovers that this is a super clever king. And it seems that he has had very interesting previous lives.
Didn't he already know that since he was omniscient?
Don't question Mahavira.
I'm sorry.
And King Bimbisara becomes such a good disciple of Mahavira that he is on route to become the first Tirthankara. But then his son imprisons him, just like in the Buddhist legend.
Jeez.
But while in prison, he kills himself in a fit of passion. So Bimbisara kills himself in prison.
Huh.
And that's a big no-no, right?
I was going to say, it's violence.
You can't be violent. And that's very violent.
Even to yourself.
Yeah, so now Bimbisara has to be reborn and suffer for his bad karma here. So he will come back and he will become Padmanabha, the first Tirthankara of the new eon. But it's been 2,500 years. We haven't seen this happen yet.
He must have to go to the purgatory hell/hell thing, right? To get burn off the bad karma then.
Maybe he had so much good karma he could make up for and just spend one life as a god or something.
I'm telling you, if it was my deal, I would just do good things, go to the heaven for a little bit, and then come back. That seems fine to me. I don't want to walk around naked and not eat.
And then do more good things and go back to heaven.
Yeah, just keep, that's a good cycle. I don't know. Life was harder in the old days. I don't know. All right. We could keep doing podcasts and stuff. It'd be great.
So we're still waiting. And I guess this is kind of like the Messiah.
Kind of, yeah. I hear you, yeah.
But this religion arises and is still going strong today. They have stayed in India and they have been quite successful in other aspects as well.
Yeah, I heard that.
There is a small contingent of Jainists Indian Jainists in Nigeria.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they fled there at some point, or they migrated there, and they're still around.
In Nigeria?
Yeah. Hmm. There are also some in Europe and in the U.S.
And then the deal with the Jainists is they have to be so nonviolent, right, that they, I don't know if it's the regular people, but the monks, they have to carry brooms, right, and brush away any, so they can't like step on any ants or anything like that. They can't go in a car because the car will crush things and the windshield will hit bugs and things like that, right?
Yes. You will also have to wear a mouth protector so you don't swallow bugs.
Oh, that too. And you know what else? You can't eat potatoes or garlic.
Yeah, because they're considered living because of the way they sprout.
Well, it's like the whole fruit. Like, so say you grow tomatoes, you just pick the tomatoes off of it, or an apple tree. You don't eat the whole tree, but it's a potato. You got to pull the whole plant up and eat it.
Oh, I see. That's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the root. You have to literally basically kill the plant to eat it, but like a tomato or an apple or something, you could just pick it.
I couldn't avoid the religion itself when I researched this. And one thing that really stuck with me was a great principle. The principle of complexity, that there is no clean truths, that nothing is absolute. that all questions are complex and have many sides to them.
Well, that's true.
And this leads Jainists to really respect other religions as well. Because there are good things in all religions. So
yeah,
they seem really nice.
They're real nice people. I mean, you know, they're not gonna cause any trouble. That's for sure.
And that's probably how they made it this far.
Yeah. I mean, you would think that's... Well, you could probably come back to bite you if the king becomes one of those. But if you could get your people to all follow that religion, you would never have any revolts or anything.
I want to end this with a conspiracy theory.
Oh, okay. I love that.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As you noticed, there were quite a few similarities between the life of Buddha and the life of Mahavira.
So many.
So what if they were the same person?
Seriously? Somebody got confused.
With the help of freelance lawyer, attorney, and advocate Amritanashu Tripathi, we will now explore this question.
Okay, let's do it.
So, similarity number one, the teachings. The doctrines are different, but they have similar concepts. And the essence is about the same. Buddhism and Jainism are similar, way more similar than, for example, Buddhism and Christianity.
Absolutely.
Both religions reject the authority of the Vedic traditions.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, they are ancient atheists, but they do believe in gods, but gods are not that important.
Right.
Similarity number two is the conflict with the Brahmins and the caste system.
Mm-hmm.
And there are no priests.
Yeah, both have no priests, right.
Similarity number three, ambiguity in the date of birth. They're born pretty close to each other, and it's all oral tradition.
Right.
Similarity number four, they have similar named wives.
Hmm.
Buddha's wife was Yashodhara, and Mahavira's wife was Yashoda.
Hmm. That's pretty close.
Yeah, that could have been corrupted over the years. Over at least 300 years of oral traditions. And similar to number five then is Mahavira's father. He's Siddhartha. That's weird.
Yeah. Is that a real common name? I don't know.
I think it's not super rare, but...
Still, right. The same period, the same, almost the same person. I get it.
Yeah. And then we have point six from Amritanashu Tripathi. And that concerns Ashoka.
Mm-hmm. Ashoka was a king later, right? And like
the king of the 3rd century, the great conqueror of Magadha.
Yeah, yeah.
And he seems to be very interested in Buddhism, but he was also very violent.
Mm-hmm.
He persecuted one of the Shramanist groups that don't exist anymore. But he wrote good things about himself on all his inscriptions.
Of course.
And maybe he tried to get rid of the non-violence thing in Buddhism.
Oh.
And thus the people who stuck with non-violence became the Jainists.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Because he's a pretty formative figure for Buddhism.
100%. He's a major.
And we don't have anyone talking about Jainism in the 3rd century BC.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So a lot of people think Ashoka just made, you know, he's the one who, if it weren't for him, there wouldn't have been all that stuff. So he could have made up a lot of it. Could have took the. So you're saying maybe they took the Jainist and then turned it into Buddhist,
or the other way around. But maybe he created Buddhism to have a violent form of Jainism,
right?
Even though Buddhists are not that violent,
right? But they could be. But a Jainist just can't be.
One great difference between the two religions is that at some point, one school of Buddhism became missionary, and they wanted to convert people to their religion in a sense that Jainism never has.
Yeah.
And as as we both are from a Christian society, we tend to think that all religions are missionary religions, but they are definitely not.
That's right.
So for a religion to aggressively spread, that's not that common.
That's right. You're right. Christianity, I think it was in Matthew where they said go out and, you know, that was like a major thing. Most religions didn't do that.
But it does happen to Buddhism a lot later than this.
Mm-hmm.
But it never happened to Jainism.
That's why there's not that many of them.
Yeah, so they are happy in their community. And if somebody wants to join them, I'm sure they'll work out a way to do that. But they will not aggressively pursue that.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting.
So that's what I have on religion and India for the 550s. And next, in the 540s, we'll talk about Confucius.
Yeah, well, we still have to do with, I think we're still going to, oh, I know what you're saying. We have the China and the 550s.
Yeah, before we leave the 550s, yeah. We'll talk about China, and we'll talk about America.
Oh, yeah, right. So we still got some, yeah. And the 550s, with religion's amazing. Think of it, we have Buddha. You have this guy, right? The Jainists. So you have Lao Tzu, and that's Taoism. Then you have Confucius. Amazing.
We, in a sense, we also have the formation of Roman religion.
Oh.
Because the Roman religion comes from the Etruscans and from the Latins, but it's taking shape at this time.
Uh-huh. And the Persians with their Zoroastrianism, and then...
Yeah, we have to do a show on that.
Yeah, you remember what happened with a Zoroastrian rich named Velma, what she did to Dr. Evil.
What?
Well, we won't. This is a family show. If you ever watched the... Austin Powers, when Dr. Evil gives his life story, he says, of a Zoroastrian named Velma ritualistically shaved my beep.
Oh, I remember it now. I had forgotten.
Yeah. I said it to Gil when we were doing the record cast, and he busted out laughing. So, yeah, anyway, the Zoroastrians. Well, I'll talk more about Taoism a little bit on the when we talk about China, but I do want to tell you guys now before it's too late. I got a tattoo on my arm of the Tao Te Ching, written in Chinese, the first line. So I'm now a committed Taoist.
Wow.
Yeah. It says the Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao, and that's when we did our first quote of Taoist quote. That was the one we said. That's the first line of the Tao Te Ching.
Oh,
Lao Tzu. So it's a very religious century, the 500s.
For sure. And a very philosophical century as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember that the great Greek thinkers, their culture is forming at this time.
Yeah, totally. You have the great sages of Greece. Well, there's different ones, but they were all in the 500s in the 6th century. So
yeah,
We're definitely, I feel we have definitely turned an era. Maybe not one of 10 to the 23rd power, you know, era, but we've definitely turned an era in this middle 6th century BC into a new, you know, moving towards the classical period for sure.
And who knew that India was so old?
I know. And they had such tall people.
Much older than the universe.
Much older. So, yeah. So that's it for today, right?
Yes.
All right. So, you know, you guys, please check out our Facebook page. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory.
And thank you to everyone who is supporting us on Patreon.
Yeah, really. Thank you so much to everyone who's supporting us on Patreon. Even if you can't support us on Patreon, if you could just listen to the show, tell your friends who might like it, like some other people do, and... It just helps us out. I just want to say, like, I say a lot of times, I do appreciate being able to do this podcast. I appreciate Dan. I appreciate you guys listening. Dan and I can't just, you know, record this and talk to ourselves if you guys weren't listening. And it's been really great for me. I got to meet Dan. I've met so many nice people. I have friends from all around the world that do podcasts and YouTube videos. And it's all thanks to this. And I really, really love it. I appreciate it.
So do I. This is my oldest podcast, and I currently do 10 podcasts.
Amazing.
But this has been around. It will soon be 10 years.
Wow. Well, I'm glad to be a part of it. And as our usual, end of our love fest at the end of our episodes, and I get all mushy, but I do appreciate it. So tell your friends so more people could listen to it and really appreciate it. We'll catch you again.
See you next time.
See you next time. Cheers.
Cheers.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just a dollar an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.